By now, you'll have heard or seen that I'm working with a new golf app called Tangent, who are also sponsoring this show. It's the smartest AI caddy in golf and is able to recommend not only clubs to hit, but target locations based on the math behind strokes gained and your own personal shot patterns. Unlike many other shot trackers, it also takes into account and adjusts for hazards that are out there. It has sensorless tracking with an amazing automatic swing detection that you can use with your Apple Watch or your phone without any need to buy any attachments for your clubs. And my favorite part, the post-round analysis data helps you immediately see where you can improve and gives you simple breakdowns that you can dive into if you want much more detail about your stats. It then links this data to recommendations and actual practice drills that you can use to improve. Getting measurable data for both on-course and practice drills makes Tangent one of the best game improvement ecosystems that I've ever seen. So download Tangent for free on the Apple App Store or at tangent.golf and use promo code SWEET30, that's SWEET30, for 30% off. So you'll get a free trial, and if you like it and want to continue, it'll give you 30% off a subscription. So just try it out, play a few rounds with it, and I know you'll love it. So that's Tangent, T-A-N-G-E-N-T, and enter code SWEET30.
Welcome back to another episode of The Sweet Spot. This is John Sherman from Practical Golf, and as always, I'm joined by
Adam from Adam Young Golf.
So today we have our most popular guest ever. I think this is his sixth time on The Sweet Spot, an unprecedented achievement. I think we're up to like 118 episodes, and I don't know what percentage of that is. It's a little less than 5%, maybe something like that. Anyway, we have Woody Lashin.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
We're good, Woody. Welcome back. It's been a while. I think it's been over a year since we've had you on, so welcome back.
It's been too long. I can't tell you how much I enjoy doing these and how many people come asking about hearing me on them.
That's the coolest thing. So apparently you've had Sweet Spot listeners from around the world come in to see you. Is that an exaggeration?
I've had more people, honestly, that I can count that have flown in. And, you know, if you're going to come in, if someone flies in, do 2 hours, go to the hotel, come back the next morning, do another 2 hours, and then be on your way. And I've had more people than I can count do it. I've had people going to see Sam and Sonny and Pete, and you know, they seem, hey, Woody, I came from Oshkosh. And I never thought that anybody would do that. I mean, as you guys know, I just do this because I love what I do, and I love talking golf and golf equipment. And I just can't believe the response. It's just been tremendous.
What's the farthest someone's come to see you?
Has anyone come like internationally?
I've had at least three people. Now, those three people I know all had business in New York, so.
Okay. Leave that detail out. They came in just for you because okay. of the show. Well, that's awesome. We appreciate everyone who has come to Pete's Golf is located on Long Island about 40 minutes. Well, it could be 3 hours. It could be 40 minutes from New York City. We don't know. And you have a new location. Tell everyone about your new location, Woody.
Yeah, we have a second location in a place, Roslyn. It's called Lab 18. It's the most amazing indoor facility that you could ever imagine. They built a 2-floor, 9-sim indoor facility. They built a putting green with not one, but 2 putt view cameras.
That thing's very cool.
Yeah. And they built a performance, you know, a lot of these indoor places they're nice, but they're for, you know, going down a few drinks and not for going to work on your game. Just for example, that they, in all their bays, they use TrackMans, and they only use RCT golf balls, which means the data you get is way better than you're getting using a ball with the aluminum dot on it. They've got some bunch of really force plate technology and stuff that I don't get into the teaching aspect, as you guys will know. That's not what I do, but they really have tried to build the best indoor training facility to work on your game that I've ever seen.
I gave a presentation there on how to use simulators effectively and launch monitors, and yeah, they did an awesome job. So for anyone who likes the information that Woody's about to give us, you could check him out. Pete's Golf is in Mineola, New York. Lab 18 is in Roslyn. Quick plugs for both of them. So for anyone who hasn't listened to Woody's episodes before, He's been on the show. We've done driver fitting, iron fitting. I think we did fairway wood and hybrid and like driver iron as a separate episode. We did a wedge fitting episode. We did a putter fitting episode. So we have a ton of existing content that you can go back to if you're interested to learn about club fitting. And they're some of our more popular episodes. And for those who haven't listened to them, Woody and everyone at Pete's Golf are some of the top fitters in the industry. I've been using them for almost 2 decades. More importantly, and this is appropriate for the conversation we're about to have, they are brand agnostic. They don't sell people stuff just because they want to sell it. They'll only fit you into clubs they need. They won't try and put you into a Ping or Callaway or TaylorMade, anything like that. So we're probably going to be discussing a few brands on the show. Just know that we have zero affiliation with any of them. And all the information that Woody gives is always brand agnostic. You always like to say that, Woody, right?
Yes, very important. If you're looking for the best performance for your game, you can't be attached to a particular brand. There's a lot of great golf clubs out there, but every company makes a lot of models for a reason because they're trying to figure out this class of person, that class of person, but there's thousands of classes, so they're all trying to hit in different areas.
Absolutely. So we have a ton of questions from Twitter as usual. We're going to see how many we can get to, but I think that the subject of this episode was going to be what's changed. Every year, Woody and everyone at Pete's Golf, they meet with all the manufacturers and the engineering teams and they go over what's new. And I think a common question I always get is, you know, how much is technology changing year over year? Is there anything left that these companies can do to make the clubs better? Are they maxed out? So I thought maybe we would go through some stuff you've seen recently, maybe not every club in the bag. We'll try and get into the different categories. So that's the topic for today, right, Woody?
You know, it's funny. 10 years ago, if you had asked me, I would have said, you know, I just don't know how much better they can really make these things. They're so good. And even though I know these engineers and most of the engineers, the guys and gals that design these golf clubs, a lot of them come from the aerospace industry. A lot of them have doctorates. They're you know, forget about smart when it comes to engineering and stuff. And they continue to make improvements year after year. Now, does that mean that you bought last year's driver and this year's driver is going to be so much better? The answer is no. It's unlikely that this year's driver is going to outperform last year's driver. Might it outperform the driver from 4 or 5 years ago? The answer is yes. And the question is, when someone comes in to us, okay, we can outperform it, and then what's the cost? Is that worth it to that client to make a change? Because in some clients' cases, if I can give them 2 or 3 more yards of dispersion that's more accurate, and I could give them 2 or 3 more yards of distance, they don't care what it costs. They play enough golf, it's their game, and they're looking for what's going to work best. On the other hand, some people are like, I've got a great driver, and it's not enough for me to change, and so we don't change. My general sense is if I can get 5 yards of dispersion or 7 yards of more distance, someone's really going to see that on the golf course. But for some, you can and some you can't.
So let's start with the driver because that's everyone's favorite club, as it should be. You know, I've seen MOI was a big thing in this year's advertising. I think it was big with TaylorMade. It was big with Ping. They were advertising over 10,000. I don't know what measurement that is, but what was the big push this year with MOI? What's going on there?
First of all, MOI, when they're giving these numbers, they're combining 2 MOI. So from the heel to the toe and from the sole to the crown, okay? And on each one of those axes, the max limit you can have is 5,900. So in theory, you can get someone to 11,800 total MOI. So when they're talking about over 10,000 MOI, it's pretty close. And the big thing that they have really pushed is the heel to toe. In fact, most of the manufacturers are really with those big, we'll take it with the Ping 10K and the TaylorMade Max, they're right at that limit. In fact, there's things that you might be able to do. I'm not going to discuss what you could and couldn't do, but you could actually make it go over the...
Oh, careful if the USGA is listening. Yeah. We're going to get narked.
Listen, you'd have to do something very, you know, that only a guy who builds golf clubs would know how to do. Joe is not going to do this in the garage. I'm not building that. I'm not going to give that to anybody. And quite honestly, I don't think it makes enough a difference. It's like if I had a driver that was 10 CT points faster on the face, you're probably not going to see the difference because you're just not hitting the ball in the center of the golf club. Even the touring players are not hitting the club in the sweet spot. I'll use the ping, for example. They've actually attracted more play for that driver because the guy's like, hey, I can swing harder. And when I swing harder, I'm missing the center more often, but I'm not losing as much by missing the center with this driver.
Is that really the push? Is because obviously we've been maxed out on, you make centered contact at 100 miles an hour. The most the ball can go is 150 miles an hour. That's been maxed out for years. But as you said, I mean, the pros miss the center sometimes, but the rest of us miss it a lot more. Is that what they're continuing to push? Is just how can we help golfers preserve? Because MOI helps with ball speed preservation as well as reducing gear effect, which just helps with dispersion as well. Is that the big push still?
Let's call it a stability push, okay? Because MOI is just one way that they are doing that. They're also doing it with the face radius. So the bowl and the roll to the face. For example, in TaylorMade's case, right, they've had the twist face for a long time. But that works. That's something that absolutely does work. Callaway is if you pull back their face, you would see it's kind of from the back. It doesn't look like it would be organized because they're trying to give you a lot more area off the face that the club is stable. So they're all going at it from little different viewpoints, but they're all trying to make drivers more stable. And when I say trying, if you go back, let's take this year's driver from 5 years ago. You can see a better result for some people. Again, I stress that to you people listening. Just because you can't go out and buy this year's driver because I got a 4 or 5 year old driver and expect for it to be better. Because it, in many cases, it may not be. But there's a good chance that you can because they have gotten so much better at what they're trying to do. They were chasing, you know, CT points for forever.
What's a CT point?
That's how fast the face bends. So think of the face as like a trampoline, right? The USGA says it can only have so much trampoline effect, which the reality is not really being a trampoline effect. But I think for the subject of the average person thinking, it's a trampoline. So it can only bounce back so much. After that, it's going to be illegal. And 0.830 is the USGA CT points number. We can go down the rabbit hole with that if you want.
Let's not. But yeah. Well, it seemed like when Callaway came out with Jailbreak, I don't know how many years ago that was, 6 or 7. So it sounds like the messaging has changed from like the Jailbreak was about more ball speed. And this seems like the messaging is going to like more face stability. Is that fair?
Yes. And a lot of that, listen, a lot of that comes from the marketing department.
Well, that's all anyone ever hears. So that's all they understand.
The engineers aren't always in agreement with the marketing of the companies.
Shocking.
But the point is that they have made better drivers. Again, what's going to work best for your game? You know, a lot of it has to do with what are your dynamics, right? So one person is hitting down 3 degrees on their driver, the other guy's hitting up 7 degrees on their driver. They need totally different kinds of technology. One guy hits it low on the face and the guy hits it high on the face. I think the great thing about doing it brand agnostically and doing it where you're not trying to sell someone something, the proof's in the pudding. Either it's better or it's not. And, you know, one of the things that we often do for the people that live on Long Island is if it's close, we say, this is close. You know, we think it's better, but it's pretty close. Borrow the driver for a day and go out and play in your golf course. Because in one round of golf, you'll know I want this, or, you know, it was just as good as my old driver. And that's an easy decision to make then. It's either I got to have it or it's just the same.
So I'm trying to think back, like that Nike driver, that like square one. So that was when they originally tried to like max out the MOI, but it was when you did that, the trade-off, you get more spin, right?
Yes.
So are they solving that equation better now?
Yes. So they're solving it way better. There's a center of gravity is only, reality is one center of gravity that floats around the middle of the head. There's multiple center of gravities when you swing a driver. But if you just have the head by itself, there's one center of gravity. For simple, the further you push it back, the more forgiving the driver becomes. But when you push it further back, it goes higher on the face and that makes it spin more. So the holy grail of drivers is keep the CG lower on the face, but further back.
Why does it go higher on the face when you go farther back?
Think about it. When I go further back, it has to raise on the face. If I have a driver that's, you know, it's only 2 inches deep, you can't get it back and it's all the way down bottom.
Just because the shape of the face.
Yeah, and it's geometry, Adam. It's not, I think we could be here for days talking about geometry, but I think it's just simple to understand. Now, the manufacturers with materials and designs, what they have today versus what they had 5 years ago, it's way better, way better. They're figuring out ways to slowly move it back, keep it down. That doesn't mean that each manufacturer isn't offering multiple drivers. You can go to any manufacturer, right? They can have probably three drivers, a lower spin version, a mid spin version, and what they might consider as a more stable version, which is a higher spin version in theory. Well, that's not always the case though, but all manufacturers have a low spin driver, right? You got a Ping LST, you got a Titleist TS4, you've got a Callaway triple diamond, you've got a TaylorMade IQ LS, you've got a Cobra LS, Dark Speed LS. I mean, they all make it, right? Well, those lower spin drivers, the CG is more forward. It has to be. Again, if you compare their higher spin driver to what it was 5 years ago, their higher spin driver is way lower. And quite honestly, it does present a little bit of a problem for some people because some people don't create enough spin. And therefore, they can't keep the ball in the air long enough. And you say, well, then just add loft. But the more loft you add, they're going to lose some ball speed. So it's so interesting that if you go back to me, it's 5 or 7 years ago, you hardly ever had a problem with someone who couldn't create enough spin. It's been a problem. Like, I've got to figure out how to make something that's going to work for this person because they can't spin it enough. Now you get those people and you have to work really hard to find something that's going to work correct for them. That the answers are out there, but they're more of a challenge.
Well, John's one of those who's suffered with low spin, and I'm one of those who can't keep my spin low enough because I launch the ball super high. So I can even get away with like 1,500 RPMs of spin with my launch. So I'm always looking for a lower spin head, really.
Right. Well, that's the beauty of it, right? You both have totally different dynamics and therefore different needs.
So would you say that's like, you know, we'll wrap up, we'll move on to irons next, but do you think that's like this year and looking ahead that that's going to be the continued push is how do we give as much stability across the face, get people hitting it farther and straighter if they hit it on the toe or the heel or low?
Yeah, absolutely. They're all doing it. I would add one thing that I thought was very interesting. When you first think of a high, super high MOI driver, you think, oh, that's for the super high handicap, right? That's what people think. And quite honestly, for the super high handicap, some of those drivers aren't very good. Because when you put the center of gravity that far back, it makes it much harder for them to square the face. They leave the face open more because it's further back in many cases. And that is why you're seeing guys using those drivers on tour. Because they're like, well, I can swing this in really hard. It doesn't want to go left. So I think that's important. I think that some of those drivers have gotten a bad rap because people don't understand how they're working and who they're for.
That's fair. All the reason more to get fit.
Yes.
All right. So let's move on to irons. If you, again, we could spend days on irons, I'm sure. But if you had to summarize what you've seen recently where you're like, okay, like this is the latest advancements in iron design, like what are they just looking to accommodate more versions of golfers? Like what are you seeing?
One of the biggest struggles for us as fitters is that they make these irons, the seven irons, to all go really far. Because when the guy goes into the store and he goes hits 4 7 irons, the one he hits the furthest is the one he buys. Well, unfortunately, that's the wrong way to get fit. And it's the wrong way to buy golf clubs because it goes far, but it doesn't go straight, it's useless. But by doing that, the loft's so strong and the center of gravity so low that for a lot of people, they can't get the ball up in the air. For the last few years, one of the things that we have done a lot is we've making the lofts weaker on a lot of these irons. I think we looked and we saw like it was like 38% or something like that at a time where we made lofts weaker on irons.
So you're just bending them as they come in, or are you ordering them that way?
Well, some were ordering, some were bending. Depends on the manufacturer. Depends on, we do it both ways, right? We build it in-house, but we also sell golf clubs that are built from the OEM, depending on someone's needs and budget. But now you've got a bunch of options in what they call HL, high launch. Mizuno's got a 923 JPX high launch. Callaway's got the Smoke AI HL. TaylorMade has the IQ10 HL. Those are three big things you did not see a couple of years ago in irons. And it's them realizing that they're starting to missing that segment of the market because they push it too far, which is fine. To me, that's the biggest change, I think, for the average player.
And they're making that accommodation through the center of gravity to allow it to launch higher?
Through center of gravity and loft, both. So they're doing both. You can't just do one. You got to do both. That's the biggest improvement. I think you're seeing a lot more options in this player distance category where we have a lot more options to deal with. We've got irons that don't spin a lot. We've got irons that spin more. Got some that launch lower. We've got some that launch higher. A lot of great options there. I would say that for me, the one thing that's really missing is that super forgiving golf club that doesn't have a super hot face. And it's a rarity, right? A guy comes in, he's swinging his 7-iron 100 miles an hour, but he can't break 100. When you give that guy a hot-faced iron, his 7-iron's going 220. When he misses it and he hits it fat and it goes 140 yards, can't control his distance at all. Now, if you could dial back that shot to only go 190 and his fat shot goes 140, he's got a better chance of maybe controlling his distances. But it's kind of an oxymoron that why would you make a club like that? I'm talking about a very small segment of golfers.
Is that the issue with a lot of the distance irons, though? Because one of the questions I constantly get asked is like, oh, I know I want to hit the ball farther, but that's great with the driver. But with approach clubs, the question you're being asked is how much distance you can control, not how far you can hit it. So I think, as you said, people get enamored with these distance irons. They're like, oh, I want to hit my 7-iron 195, but then it doesn't go the same distance more often. Like, I'd much rather someone hit their 7-iron 175, 170, if they know it's going to go around that distance more often.
I have a great example because I won't give you the gentleman's name, but he's a sweet spot listener because he came to me from listening to you guys. So, Steven, if you're out there, you know I'm talking about you. He came and got a set of irons and his distance control was not good. So we gave an iron that went much shorter than his old irons did and shorter than all his buddies. And he said to me in his club championship with his Arco stats or whatever it was, he was plus 4.7 in approach shots. His approach shots were spectacular, but he's still a little worried, like, well, they're not going quite as far as I'd like him to go, but you're controlling them. And obviously he's quite happy because he's playing really good, but that's one of the, sometime a trade-off you may have to make. You may have to go to something that's not going to go as far as your buddy's irons in order to give you something that can control better. But I'll hit a 7-iron all day long instead of a 9-iron if I could hit that 7-iron way more consistently straight than the 9-iron.
Yeah, I think people get stuck with that. So the best iron player I know, and Woody, you know him too, he's won the Long Island Open a couple of times. He doesn't hit his irons very far. And he's like, who cares? I bet he knows the number it's going. That's what he knows. He knows where it's going most of the time, and he knows the number it's going. So it's not a distance chase with irons. I think a lot of people get stuck with that sometimes.
I was going to say, this is your department, where you got to get the student to understand that it's not about hitting your 7-iron as far as they can.
Yeah. I mean, the way I do it is I will select, I don't really compare 7-iron to 7-iron necessarily, but I compare a distance. So I would say, I maybe pick 160 and I would say, okay, well, hit this club, see which one has the tightest dispersion to that pin. So that's the way that I would go about it in testing technique as well. But the question I have for you is, it's obvious why game improvement or distance irons go farther, right? Hotter faces, lower spin, higher launch, things like that. But why would they be less consistent directionally if you were comparing to a specific yardage?
Yeah, it's not left and right. It's more long and short.
And why is that? Why would it be less consistent?
Well, because if you hit it perfect in the center, it explodes, it doesn't spin, and it goes quite far. Then you hit it off center. It starts spinning way more. It doesn't maybe have as much ball speed. And so it goes much shorter.
So there's more variability across the face?
There can be, yes. There can be.
Hmm. So why are they called forgiving irons then?
Well, because if you're the average golfer out there, that iron is going to be way more forgiving for you on your trade something off, right? In a perfect world, we talk about this all the time when you go into a fitting. There's very rare fittings you go in where you say, this is 1,000% perfect for this person. You may be trading off. Say, well, I need some distance control, but the person needs more forgiving when they hit the ball on the toe because they don't hit the ball in the center more often. So that person will hit that game improvement iron much more consistently because that's where they tend to hit the golf ball. Then you've got a player that's really good and he's fine in the center a lot, but he's up and down the face, right? He's one high in the face, one low on the face, and he's got a hard time controlling his distance. Well, you've got to find something that maybe doesn't go as far so he can control his... You think about it, if your explosive 7-iron goes 190, but your stock 7-iron is 178, you're in big trouble when you pure that iron, it goes 190. If you pure your iron and you're playing 178 and it goes 180, you can play golf. You know, one of the Twitter questions was forgiving. And I always say, the question is forgiving for whom? What are your tendencies? What do you do on the golf course? Where do you tend to hit the golf ball on the face? What are your patterns? And there's something that will cross all of the boxes that's best for you.
I was under the assumption, this may still be part of the equation, that how the sole of the club interacts with the turf is a reasonably big part of the distance equation or the consistency of distance. So, you know, my thinking is that for better players, you know, their good strikes are going to be ball turf and their bad strikes might just be half an inch behind. So nothing too bad. Now, if you stick a blade-like club with that player, that half inch behind is still going to dig in, right? Because those blades, they want to dig in, right? Thinner sole. And so you'd get a consistent, I call it dynamic angle of attack. Whereas to go the other side, if you give that same player a thick-soled club, now when they hit half an inch behind, what does the club do through impact? Bounces up off the turf more, right? It's less likely to dig in than the blade. And that changes the angle of attack through impact, thus changing spin loft, thus changing launch speed, smash, and they get more variable distances for that slight error. At least that's my thinking behind it. I think I've mentioned it on Twitter before, and I've had some of the ping guys kind of say that, I think it was Paul Wood, kind of liked the post. I noticed when Paul Wood likes a post of mine because I'm like, okay, yes, little win.
He's a great guy, man. Very, very smart.
Yeah, I mean, all the ping guys are super smart. Yeah, so. And then you think about with a higher handicap club, their strike pattern with the ground is probably closer to 1 inch behind to 2 inches behind, so a much bigger fat shot. And they would actually benefit more from the thicker sole club because they want that bounce up. It's going to be bouncing up consistently for them. So they actually benefit from that. So it you know, it's less likely to dig in than the blade and hit a complete chunk. So that was my thinking behind it.
We are going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
John and I have just got an amazing set of clothing from Roback, our show sponsor. We have polos that are perfect for golf, and they have the best collar in the game as they don't lose their shape, making you look crisp and sharp on the golf course. They've got a great stretch performance fabric that fits much better than boxy polos, and they even have some really fun designs. Or if you're like me, you'll go for more of the classic solids. The quarter zips are super soft and really easy to swing and move in, and their golf hoodies are perfect for on and off the course too. John and I are huge fans, so make sure to get yourself some amazing golf clothing and support our sponsors. Head to roback.com, spelled roback.com, to get 20% off your first purchase through the end of the week using code SWEET. The link is in the show notes. So that's roback.com, spelled roback.com.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/sweetspot. LinkedIn is not just a job board. It helps you hire professionals you cannot find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to a new perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. Also on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Just recently, they even launched a new feature that helps you write your job description, making the process even easier and quicker. And they know that small business owners like myself and Adam are wearing so many hats and might not have the resources to hire, so it's a great place to get help. Now here's what you can do. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/sweetspot. That's linkedin.com/sweetspot to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
You're spot on, and I will tell you, that is one of the things that a great fitter has to pay attention to, because off of Matt, oh, I'm hitting that great, and I'm going, no, you're not. You're hitting it high in the face outside. That's not going anywhere. And so figuring out what someone's tendencies are and what kind of soul they need is critical part of fitting.
Yeah, I have got a fiber-built mat, and so it has two different types of turf on it. It's got the hard, bouncy mat that you would normally think of a driving range mat, and then it has the fiber-built stuff, which acts more like as if ground isn't there at all. And I've done tests with wedges on there in my own game, and I get much more variable spin rates on the hard mat. And obviously the answer is when I'm striking pure, it's going to be high spinning. And then all of a sudden I'll hit one half an inch behind and it'll bounce up off the mat. And then all of a sudden you get high launch, lower spin because the dynamic angle of attack has changed. Whereas that doesn't happen as much off the fiber built stuff. So yeah, it's interesting to think about what you're hitting off as well and how that might differ to real turf conditions.
It's a critical part of the golf that doesn't get talked about a lot is how is that turf, the sole going to interact with turf. And it has a lot to do with someone's tendencies. It's a lot to do with where they play, what kind of conditions they play on. And again, it's the kind of thing where we say, we're not 100% confident with someone. We say, well, you know, we think this is really good, but man, I'm a little worried about it, this turf interaction. We let the person go out and take it out and go on the golf course for a day and hit it outside, and they will figure it out real quickly whether we're right or not. And I think for us, we tend to bat a pretty high percentage there of helping people give things that was going to work best, but it's not 100% because there's a lot of guesswork.
So before we move on to wedges, anything else that you think has been significant lately, or is just this like, you know, it sounds like now they have options for so many people that it's almost even become more complicated. So I guess there's more of the options than ever, but then more opportunity to get it wrong and right. Is that fair?
Yes. We obviously could be on talk about this stuff all day long, but
just so people know, we do have a whole episode on iron fitting you can go back to, of course.
There's been a lot of improvements in fairway woods. You know, there's a lot of great, much, much better fairway woods today.
Yeah, I feel like fairway woods are taking over like hybrids and long irons now. Like everyone wants like a 7-wood and a 5-wood and whatever in between.
Again, you can go back and listen to what we talked about, right? You know, you can have a driving iron, a hybrid, a real, you know, 2-iron and a 5 or 7-wood. And one of those products is going to be best for your game and something else for somebody else, right? But they've made great strides in what they're doing with their fairway woods. There's a bunch of fairway woods now that really launch high and don't spin for that player that's looking to get max distance. And one company I used to argue with, like, well, you have to be able to control the landing angle of your 3-wood. And I'm like, well, listen, I play some decent competitive golf, and if I'm hitting a 3-wood, I'm trying to get it to go as far as I can with roll and everything. I'm not trying to stop it on a green very often, right? There's something in front on a par 5. Unless I'm trying to get in a front bunker, I'm not trying to carry it onto that green and land it soft with a 3-wood. They've made great improvements.
Awesome. So wedges, want to give us the quick rundown? What's going on there? I got new wedges this year. You sent me the newer Ping wedges. I think they transitioned from the Glide to another model. But yes. What's the latest with wedges?
The really cool thing with wedges is that getting kind of back to the iron thing, where the sole is so critical on wedges. And everyone sees these numbers on the bottom that say bounce. So it says 8 degrees or 10 degrees. They don't realize that that's not the actual measured bounce of the wedge. It's the effective bounce that the manufacturer thinks how that club's going to go through the turf. And you're seeing more and more now where companies have two or products that say 8 degrees on them, but the soles are completely different. And you go, well, but they both have 8 degrees of bounce, but they're for two completely different players. One player might need a much narrower sole with a lot more actual effective bounce, and the other person might need a wider sole with a lot less effective bounce, but because the sole is wider, that how it's going to interact with the ground is completely different. And you're seeing more and more of this. I would tell you that, you know, one of the problems they have is that, you know, how many SKUs can you have? You can only produce so many SKUs, and if you're only selling 300,000-400,000 wedges a year, you can only build so many models. But they're realizing that, hey, this is important, and that really gives the fitter a lot more options. And it also gives us an opportunity, I think, to maybe explain it a little better to someone, like, well, these both say 8 degrees on them. Why do they look very different? Well, they both have 8 degrees effective bounce, but they're doing it very differently.
So is effective bounce then how high the leading edge is sitting above the base?
No, that's the measured bounce. So if you think about bounce, so that you have the actual measured bounce. So if you were to flip the wedge upside down and hold it up, how much higher off that back, how many degrees off the front edge is the actual measured bounce? But then you have the radius of the leading edge. So if the leading edge is really sharp, it's going to tend to dig in. If it's really rounded, it's going to dig in less. You have the width of the sole. So the wider the sole, the more effective the bounce becomes. The narrower the sole, the less effective that bounce becomes. You also have the grind, right? So I could have a really wide sole, but a lot of relief in the heel and the toe, it's going to go through the ground very differently than if I had no relief.
You could have two clubs that both of them, the leading edge sit above the table, above the surface, the same height, but they're doing so in different ways. So one would have a narrow sole that has a big angle to it, right? And then another one would have a wider sole that has a less angle to it.
Correct.
Right, okay.
Because you think of it, if you took that narrower sole and you lengthened it, that would then go higher up, right? Because the sole is getting further back.
Yeah, yeah. So then you reduce the angle and it brings the leading edge back down again. Which type of player would benefit from one of those? So I'm thinking of like the Edel, Edel wedges?
Edel, yeah.
Like they're the narrow bounce with a sharp angle to it, right?
Yep.
What type of player would benefit from something like that?
So I think it depends on if someone, how steep they are, how much they de-loft the wedge at impact, what conditions they're playing on, and then what kind of shots are they trying to play with that wedge. So let's just take a narrow sole and a wider sole. When I open that narrower sole, because the sole is narrower, even if it's got more bounce, I don't increase the amount of effective bounce as much. When I take that wider sole and I open the face up, I'm creating a lot more bounce. Some players don't open their wedges at all, so that's not a factor for them, right? Other players, that's all they're doing is opening or closing it.
Suppose this is like the Alien wedge versus the Edel wedges, right? And so the Edel wedge, you could be a bit more versatile with it. You can open it up and it's not going to sit the leading edge high, whereas if you did that with an Alien wedge, that leading edge is going to be sitting above the ball probably.
Correct. Correct. I think, by the way, the high bounce wedge gets it's bad wrapped. I have one player that's a really good player. He's a plus handicap, and he's using the Callaway CB wedges, which have super wide soles and tons of bounce, but that's what he needs. You know, Bob Vokey I've been lucky enough to meet and spend a lot of time with him, and he was like, bounce is your friend. So I think that those high bounce wedges get a bad rap sometimes, but you need what you need. If you listen to the wedge you remember this, Adam, where I talked about how I like, if I can give someone two or three different souls to use in their short game, I give them more options, right? I give one that's better. Maybe the conditions are softer. I give it one where the conditions are a little better, firmer. You can't always do that, but if you can give them more options. I would say the other thing is that we're seeing more and more players that are going to 4, 5. I have a guy that is using 6 wedges.
Jeez. 6?
Yeah.
Starts at heck?
62, 58, 54, 50, 46.
Wow.
Okay.
And then it's pitching wedge.
And then it's pitching wedge?
He's got tons of speed. Needs some forgiveness.
How far does he hit his pitching wedge? Like 160, 170?
His club head speed was like 104 with a smooth 7-iron.
Okay.
So oh my God. Big.
Tons and tons of speed. But again, you need what you need. I just gave a 15 handicap the other day, 5 wedges, because you could not give him longer clubs. You give him a driver and a 3-wood, and the longest you could give him was a 5-iron. You got nothing in between that was going to go any further or any straighter than his 3-wood or his 5-iron. And he needed more forgiving golf clubs. And I talked to him. He's like, well, you know, I play a short golf course and, you know, I got a lot of these shots from 80, 70, 90, 100 yards. So, well, why don't we put, and he's like, a light bulb went out in his eyes. He's like, oh my gosh, that would be great. You know, I wouldn't have to hit as many half shots. I'm like, you have plenty of room in your bag for them.
What's the data on wedges wearing out? When should you replace them? That was a question asked on Twitter.
Yeah. Listen, wedges wear, and if you get a new wedge and you've got an old wedge that's worn, you will see the difference. However, it's not like you have to change them, right? I think that, Tyler says, 70 rounds of golf. I don't think that's a fair number because where do you play? How often do you use the wedge? I tell people, listen, for us, come in, we'll look at it, we'll tell you. It's worn, got to change it, don't change it. Depends on where you're playing, the conditions you're playing on. And quite honestly, how serious you take in the game, right? So if I'm just going out, I'm playing with my buddies and I'm having a bunch of beers and you know what? If my wedge is a little bit worn, so it might have 4 or 5 more yards of inconsistency. Not a big deal. You're playing serious. You're playing with your buddies for a few bucks. You're trying to get to the next level. You want your groove to be fresh. Most of the time, they make wedges out of softer material than they make the rest of the golf clubs. So they will feel softer on those partial shots. And that's great for feel, but it's not so good for wear, right? Because it's softer and it means it's going to wear out faster.
Yeah, we get that question a ton. Only club in the bag that truly wears out unless you hit your iron a million times.
I've seen some putters wear out.
Really?
Yeah. Really, really good players that only have used one putter for a long time. I've seen some concave faces on putters that you wouldn't believe. Soft face putters. And I know the guy, I'm like, well, the guy's like, he's one of the best in the area and he's got a wear spot in his putter. And of course you can't get that putter anymore. And you trying to find something for him. That's a tough. I don't think that's an issue for most people out there.
No, you can always tell the really good putters are the people who hang on to them for a long time. I had Mac Hughes let me use his Ping putter and the face looks like it's destroyed because he's been using it for a decade. And I asked him, like, is this thing, he actually has had the Ping guys like really measure it because he was afraid of that. The middle of the face looked like absolutely destroyed.
I'm going to counter that, John. I had my Odyssey 2 ball for 23 years and I never putted well with it.
Well, yeah, you're the anomaly. Yeah.
I recently got rid of it, though. I still don't putt well.
Shall we move on to putters, Woody? Any? That's why I was wondering, like, what's left with putters? Like, a lot of people asked about this Lab putters. They seem to be exploding. I don't know if you're working with them yet, but what's, like, the latest frontier in putter design?
The Lab putter is a very interesting putter, and it's something Qantas that we love, but we struggle with. And we struggle with it because it's all based around the lie angle, right? So you can rotate the face on the lie angle. And so if you change the lie angle by 1 degree, the face won't rotate around that properly. They call that their secret sauce. Well, the problem then is if I got 6 or 7 models and I've got five or six lies that I might be selling on a regular basis. It's way too many putters to have sitting around. They've got an adjustable version for fitting, but doesn't really give you the full feedback. And I really like what they're doing. We met with them at the PGA show and we're trying to figure something out. And listen, they're exploding.
Am I remembering correctly? They used to be Directed Force, right?
Correct.
That has to be one of the most amazing brand turnarounds I've ever seen, because that original Directed Force putter was like, no disrespect to them, but it looked like a spaceship. Like it was, some people swore by it, but I remember using it a few times at the PGA show. I'm like, I can't look at this thing. And now these lab putters are like, I mean, I've played a ton of tournaments with guys who are like, I love this thing. I can't live without it. Like they're really, it's been an incredible turnaround for them.
Yeah.
We are going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Maui Nui Venison, a mission-based food company bringing the healthiest red meat on the planet directly to your door. My wife and I have been absolutely obsessed with their products the last few months, cooking with their meat and eating their jerky. Also, Maui Nui has a very special operation going on, and it is the only stress-free, 100% wild-harvested red meat on the market. And most importantly, it's seriously delicious and easy to cook. My wife and I have cooked many of their recipes, including meatballs, different loins, and it is delicious. Perhaps my favorite products are their all-natural venison jerky sticks. You get 10 grams of protein and just 55 calories. This is a great snack after a workout, or you can bring it on the course if you're feeling a little hungry, and you'll get a huge kick of protein with very little calories. Perhaps one of the most important things for me is that there's only 1.5% fat in all of their meat. I know I'm getting maximum protein, nutrient-dense calories, and more importantly, it's very low in saturated fat. And that's something that's really important to me in my diet. Because there's such a limited supply of their meat, they open up a few monthly restocks available for purchase. So now for our offer. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com/golf and take advantage of this limited time offer for 20% off your first order. Once again, that's MauiNuiVenison.com/golf. MauiNuiVenison.com/golf. Or use the coupon code GOLF to get 20% off your first order.
They figured out how to make the face rotate the way they want it to with different looking heads. It didn't have to be like look like that. You call it a spaceship. We used to call it a branding iron.
It was weird. But the new ones look pretty, like they're pretty slick looking.
Yes.
So what's it supposed to do then? So if you, well, the face doesn't twist, it's harder to twist the face or what?
The theory is, as I take the face back and rotate the face open, and then as I come through and I rotate it closed, I have this equal amount of force the entire way. Whereas with any other putter, the force is unequal. And so it's their theories is harder time. Now, I will tell you that's not a new theory. There's a company that made a putter like that 25 years ago. It didn't work very well. Maybe they didn't push the design as well as as Lab. I think that they certainly didn't. I think that, you know, Lab is, again, they're doing something different, but that doesn't mean that putter is for everybody.
But isn't it more important that the consistency of inputs that you're putting into the club is going to result in a consistent delivery? I mean, like Tiger had, well, he started with the face open 3 degrees, but he just returned it back square every time. Maybe I'm misunderstanding the whole thing. I'll have to do more research into it, but I mean, I don't know.
Listen, different center gravities have and different balances of faces have been around for a long time in putting. And the different manufacturers have done great jobs of having a lot of different options. And again, I think brand agnostic couldn't be more important than anything else than putting. Because when you come in and we're looking to have someone, what do you like to look at? Okay, well, Scotty Cameron makes a great putter for you. Great. But you know what? I want a Scotty Cameron. They don't make a great one for you, but Odyssey does. Wait a minute. You know what? The best ones for you is the Ping. Hold on. No, it's TaylorMade. The companies all make great putters. They all make different balances, but they make them all a little bit differently, and you need what you need. I always like to say when I'm talking putting, because I think it's real important, full disclosure, I don't do the putter fittings anymore. So I'm not the resident expert because I used to do them all the time. I'm not the one doing them anymore. So I have a lot of info. I'm not going to tell you that I'm the expert in that area. I would want you to come see Sonny, Sam, or Mike, because they do them and they know way more than I do because they're doing them on a regular basis.
Yeah, I've just typed into Google double blind placebo controlled study lab putters. I'll report back next episode what I find.
Watch Adam's strokes gained is going to go from like -3 with the putter to like gaining 5 strokes and he's going to be shooting 59.
Hey, it already, I don't know if you saw my last round, but I gained 3 strokes with my putter last round versus a scratch. Yeah, it was 8 strokes different.
Oh my God, it's like a miracle. So Woody, Adam's been like showing off. He's been doing this thing lately where he's like, oh, look at my poor putting stats. And meanwhile, he's showing like 5 strokes gained with his approach and like driver. So it's like this, it's a little bit of a humble brag completely. / cry for help, but
it's basically, look how well I'm striking at the moment.
He's like the non-professional version of Scottie Scheffler. Let's put it that way. When Scottie Scheffler learned putts well, he destroys everyone like he did yesterday at Bay Hill, which was ridiculous. So he switched to that. That'll be interesting to see. I know he switched to that mallet putter. Rory told him to do it. I don't think that solved it for him, but it's got to be part of the equation.
And it worked pretty good this weekend, I got to tell you.
It worked, yeah. But you know what? I'm so, not to be like a cynic about that stuff, but you know that as a competitor, sometimes when you make a change like that, like speaking of placebo effects, sometimes, you know, how many times has Rory gone back and forth and he puts the mallet and they're like, oh my God, he's putting great. And then he goes back to like the initial flaws will show themselves. So I know he's been working with like Phil Kenyon for a while. And I imagine that the stuff that they're working on is going to lead to those longer term gains. Like, I just don't buy that a professional golfer can like put a mallet into play and all of a sudden his putting woes disappear. I think it's a little more complicated than that.
What I tell people is that the worst putter on the PGA Tour, the worst, I don't know who was the worst.
Blow you out of the water.
Yes, they're amazing. Okay?
Yeah, they will blow you out of the water.
So like if you, oh, I could beat that putting contest. No, you can't.
No.
So the placebo effect, hey, if that gets him to win a PGA Tour event.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see though what his sustained putting looks like for the rest of the year, because it's, I mean, he's striking the ball just about as good as anyone in the history of the game. It's crazy. And if he just putts like average, he wins.
Let's check back in 6 months and see how he's done.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
I suspect it's going to be pretty good.
I'm sure he's going to win a ton more. I mean, the guy's just so good. What else is going on with like putter design? I mean, again, like there's, I think the problem with for everyone listening to this is that, you know, they don't have an opportunity to work with someone like you all the time. So there's a million different wedge grinds and irons and drivers, and now there's a million different putters. So like, what are they trying to do with putter design? Like every year, they're trying to match up to more different segments of golfers. Is it similar goals there?
Yeah. And I guess, and I would say to you that a putter, Mackenzie Hughes has got a putter in his bag for 20 years, right? If you have a great putter, don't look at anything else. You start putting bad, sometimes you need to look at something different. But that's more of an emotional component than it is a, you know, a scientific component, which is my job. So sometimes you look at something different. Sometimes you need to feel something completely different. You need to feel that face rotate completely differently. But is there some new breakthrough technology? There is not.
No. That's so disappointing.
You want me to lie to you? No, I'm lying. I'm lying. Everyone run out and get...
I'm with you. Like I've been using, you know, I have that Seymour putter. It's the only club in the bag you haven't fit me for, but I won't let go of it because I love it. I'm confident with it. I hope to have it for 20 more years. But when people struggle, like they want to like, I know people with like 8 different putters.
Yes. If you're going from putter to putter to putter, it can be quite difficult. So.
All right. We have a bunch of Twitter questions. Funny side note. The mouse on my computer stopped working, so I've been like ferociously trying to find all the Twitter questions in the background here.
I got a few of them.
Adam, you want to cue us up with one while I load up my phone here?
Well, I tell you what, I'm actually going to be really selfish here and take advantage of my position of power and ask a question that helps me.
Go for it.
My swing is super slow, Woody. Super slow, like sludge. I always feel like...
No, he's not. He swings his... You swing your driver like 102. Get out of here. It's not that slow.
Yeah, well, for... Yeah, I feel more powerful.
You're going to offend people listening to this. Yeah.
Anyway, it frustrates me. I feel like the club is swinging me, honestly. When I swing the club back, I'm like, oh, God, I'm swinging a heavy iron bar. How much could go into a lighter shaft help or hurt? Like, what were the advantages or disadvantages? What are some of the speed jumps you've seen from going to lighter? Or how can I improve my speed? What can I do? Is there different ways?
Well, I would say that the best way to improve your speed is to go see a great PT guy and have him work on your body. And you can do speed training, right? That's not my department, but stuff like the stack system, that works, but you got to do it and you have to do it religiously.
I'm doing it and it's not budging right now, but
he's looking for something from you. Do you have another solution for him?
Well, so I would say the number one thing is, you get try using a longer driver.
I am. My tight list is already like 49 inches or something. That's why I feel like it's swinging me.
He's like, I'm breaking every rule in the book.
Yeah.
Can't be over 48 inches right now. And if you're going to compete, it's 46 inches, Adam. So you got to be careful there.
I got the longest one they'd give me a couple of years ago. So whatever the tight list website would give, that's what I've got.
So the answer is that a lighter shaft might help, but it's less likely than you think.
How much could that give you? Like 1 or 2 miles an hour? Like what's a realistic expectation with like shaft weight?
I've seen guys where it's 5 miles an hour.
Oh, really? That's significant.
Yes. And I have seen players where we've gone heavier and gained 1 mile an hour.
Why would that happen? Just moment of inertia changes?
Well, because if they can't control, they can't feel where the golf club is, their body can't perform at the maximum performance for that player. Length of driver, I can't tell you how many times someone comes in and we make the driver shorter and their speed goes up. That should not happen. But if they're all over the place with their current driver, you might get them to be able to control themselves a little better, and then their body actually will function better and their club head speed will go up. So I don't prescribe to lighter is always going to work, or heavier is always going to work, or longer or shorter. Those are the tools in my toolbox of trying to find the best club for a particular individual.
I know that makes sense because I know, you know, Mike Carroll, Fit for Golf on Twitter, everyone kind of knows him. But for a long time, when Super Speed first came out, people were like, you know, I swing the there's three different weights. There's a light, medium, and heavyweight one. And some people would generate an abnormally high amount of speed with the light one. And then with the heavy one, they would struggle. It's because they just weren't strong enough. And some people were vice versa. So people got different results with different weights. So that does kind of make sense what you're saying, Woody.
Yeah.
You just don't know until you try. But you can bridge that if you work more with them. Like me, for example, like I was slower with the heavy one. And now I can get it up to like 110, 112 because I lifted weights and I worked with it more. But initially, I couldn't get it past 100.
I would also say to be quite careful, because I cannot tell you how many times someone comes in with one of these super light drivers and they're like, yeah. And I went to the demo day and I was swinging my club at 90 miles an hour and I took this lighter one and I was swinging at 95 miles an hour and the ball speed was higher and the ball is going further. This is great. And now it's, you know, 3 months later and I'm hitting it the same distance I used to hit it and I'm hitting it crooked. So it can fool you sometimes in a one-off test that you can swing it faster, but that might not work for you on the golf course.
Especially if you're cherry-picking the data.
Yeah. And for the club fitter, that's our job to look at your swing and go, oh, no, that is not going to work for you. Or, oh, yes, this is going to make a big difference for you. A lot has to do with strength, right? The stronger you are, probably the heavier you can handle, and the weak you are, the lighter you probably need. But it doesn't always work that way. You know, Matt Dobbins is a very good friend of mine, won the National Club Pro twice. He can't get it light enough. 180 mile an hour ball speed. Wants it as light as he can get it. So there are exceptions to the rule all the time. And if you go back and listen to my episodes, you always hear me say there is no musts or there's no rules that can't be broken in club fitting. Because there's always someone that comes along and needs something that you go, I can't do that, but I have to do it for them.
As usual in golf, it depends. So You mentioned this when you're answering Adam's question. Here's another question from Twitter. When someone wants to go from 44 and a half inches down to 43 and a half inches. So you did that for years, Woody. We worked with a 44 inch driver and you cut the shaft down. So some people can't get that done. Like what's the best rule of thumb for someone who doesn't want to play like a 46 inch or 45 and a half inch driver? Because a lot of people in the fitting, you find out, yeah, 43 and a half or 44 might be better. What do you have to do to the club to make sure that works?
I mean, you can't just cut it down, right? You've got to rebalance it. So if you cut an inch off the length of the driver, you've got to add weight back to the head.
Because the swing weight will change, obviously, because you've taken a chunk of it off.
Yes, correct. And you know what? Today, there's a lot of different drivers that have weights that you can take the weight out and add more weight or make a lighter weight if you want to go longer. The Ping has a great, you can go really go up and down big time with the amount of weight in it. Let's say a Ping driver. Callaway's got a really good adjustability as far as the weight of a head goes. There are a lot of options out there.
So just to be clear, though, a manufacturer will not sell you a 44-inch shaft. You have to buy a standard one and cut it down?
Well, first of all, every driver shaft that I know of is 46 inches when they come raw. I mean, I'm sure there maybe are some, but you go up and down a line of shafts. They're all 46 inches raw. Right, then you put it into a driver head that can make it up to 48 and a half, maybe. Depends on that. Some drivers have longer hosels, some have less hosels. You have to cut them no matter what, right? Nobody's going to sell you a driver over 48 inches, I don't think, because that's the USGA capped rule, and all the manufacturers are building products that are designed to be legal. If you're going to play in a competition, it's got to be 46 inches. Although, John, as you know, right, some competitions are allowing the 48-inch driver. My own personal opinion is, by the way, if you can swing a 48-inch driver, you should be able to use it. But that's a topic for a different day.
My heart was broken when I had to cut my 47 down to a 46, and then I don't think they adopted the local rule. I don't even remember, but I stuck with the 46 now.
Yeah. So you could cut the driver down. Now, sometimes most of the time, if it's already put in the club, you're cutting it from the butt. That's okay. Just got to add weight back to the head. And if you go to any, there's a lot of great club makers around the country. And if you say, listen, I want a 44-inch driver and I want it at a reasonable swing weight of D0, they can do it for you.
So it's not something you should like mess around with at home.
Well, you can, but you're going to have, I mean, if you don't have a swing weight scale, you're going to have somewhat of an issue trying to get it to work right for you. Although, if you wanted to, you go cut your driver down and go get a roll of lead tape. And start putting tape on the head till you feel like you can control it.
I've experimented with this when we were messing because I played two different drivers for a year, a 44 inch and a 47 inch. And the swing weight, moving the weights in and out, made such a difference in how it felt and how I could, like, it was a big deal to me to get the weighting right. Because when it wasn't right, I felt like it had no pop or power to me.
Yep.
And I ended up having to take more weight out of the 47-inch than we initially thought, I remember. I think I took one of the weights out, and I was like, this is the only way I can play with this thing. So you do have to get it right. I've messed around with a lot of different lengths, and it does feel different, and it will change your impact tendencies for sure.
Absolutely.
Here's another question. This is like the question. I always want you to address this one. Is club fitting useful for a novice player with inconsistent strikes? Because I think the question that always comes back to you or anyone else with club fitting is that I'm not good enough to do this. And I've seen people, I've been to your shop. I remember it must've been like 7 or 8 years ago. I think it was a mother and a son came in and they went over to Pete, your partner. And they're like, he's getting into golf. Like he wants a whole new set of clubs. And Pete's like, no, we're not going to sell them to you. Like go get lessons first, which you wouldn't see many people do, but you guys are actually like responsible business owners, you know, just selling people what they don't need. But yeah, that question comes up a lot is like, if a player's hitting it all over the face, their tendencies are all over the place. Like, do you fit people? Like, is there a line in the sand? I know it depends, but shed some light on this.
That's a great question. And the answer is maybe. So let me define that a little bit. So if you're trying to learn the game of golf, which is a really hard game to learn, and you're learning it with equipment that is the wrong size. So the club is too long, club is too short, lie is too upright, lie is too flat for your body type, not your swing, but your body type. you, if any kind of athlete, are going to try to adjust to make that golf ball fly straight. And when you do that, you are lowering your ceiling for how good you can get to, because you have to adjust around the golf club to make that swing work. And then if you come to me 3 years later and you're like, hey, okay, I've been playing, I'm shooting 90 and I've been fighting the ball going left. Well, of course you have, because the lie is too upright and you figured out a way to get it to go straight. And if you want to get better, I've got to make the lie angle flatter, but it's going to be some pain maybe at first, because ball's going to start going right that you were used to going left.
Was that me you were talking about?
So the question is, in some people, the answer is yes. Some people, the answer is no. Someone comes in and go, you know, the clubs are close. So they're the right size. Maybe the shaft's a little bit off and flex, but it's in the right weight zone. Go take some lessons. Go work on it. I'll see you when you feel like you're ready. On the other hand, guy comes in and these clubs are all wrong. You have to change those clubs. I cannot tell you how often we get someone come in and we're like, okay, listen, the clubs are no good for what you do. However, you're not ready to figure out exactly what you need, because you've told us you're going to work on it. You told us you're going to take lessons. You told us you're going to practice. So let's maybe take one of your clubs and reshaft it or adjust the lie. Do something so that one club can work and say, okay, sometimes the equation of having an old demo in the back here, take this and we'll see you in 3 months, and go hit that club as much as you possibly can. Inevitably, that person comes back in 3-6 months. You're like, okay, I can only hit that club. I need clubs now. And now their swing's a little more consistent, and we can help them and let them spend a bunch of money and get something that's going to be good for them. The one thing I will tell you is, so when someone says they're not good enough to get fit, the higher your handicap, the more I can help you. When Adam comes in, I can help him the least. John, when you come in, it's really hard to try and help you, because you can get anything to work. You got a lot of talent and you can make it work. Whereas when you're a higher handicap, you can't do that. And I have a famous story where a guy came in to me and he was a 38 handicap. And he said, listen, Woody, I'm coming here because my friends all tell me I got to come here. It's like, but you can't help me. But I joined a second club and I need a second set of clubs. And my friends tell me you guys are the best. So, you know, sell me a set of golf clubs. So I sold him a set of golf clubs. And that was in the springtime. And in the fall, I see him at my book again. I'm like, what are you doing here? He's like, you know, I'm a 32 handicap now. He's like, the only thing I did was change the golf clubs. And he's like, now I need a second set for Florida, because these, I was putting my old clubs down there. I can't play with anything but these. He was convinced that he couldn't be helped. He'd been a 38 handicap and playing golf for a long period of time, but he was using the wrong stuff. And the right stuff allowed him to play better golf. Now, is that going to happen all the time? Absolutely not. Are the people going to come in like, you're a 38 handicap and I can't help you? The answer is yes. But the higher your handicap, the bit more a fitter can help you. A true fitter, someone whose goal is to try and help you play better golf, not try to just sell you a set of golf clubs.
I got a couple of real world examples. A guy I play with, he's got more money than sense and he likes to buy his way out of problems, just to say that. And I've been watching slowly as every time I go out with him, his grip is getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and that face is getting more and more closed. And obviously when he's hitting a wedge, he loves it because his goes 150. But he got to the point where his driver isn't getting airborne anymore. So his answer to that is, go and get a new driver. And me as his coach friend, I'm like, no, let's just go on the range and we'll figure out how to get that face more open. It's not rocket science, but no, he wants to buy a new driver. Because anyway, he did go off and get that new driver and it worked. They did things, they added loft to it, they did whatever they could to make that face not close down, and now he's getting it up in the air and it's going straight. Only problem is all his irons are going left still, and they're getting even worse. And now, because he can get away with it with that strong grip with the driver, it's getting stronger and stronger with the driver. In fact, towards the end of the last round, he started snap hooking that driver. So, yeah, it's almost this case of they fixed the driver, but the technical fault was still there, and it stayed with the irons. So is that a case where you would say, you know, if you see someone come in and they're presenting path 10 degrees into out and face 5 degrees close to it, and they're snap hooking everything. Is that a case where you say to them, look, I can make your driver go up in the air, but you need to go off and get some lessons? Or are there things you can do to make the irons go more right as well?
I'm going to have a conversation with that person, and I'm going to try to get them to come and work on their game. It's one of the reasons why I've always believed in having a great teacher in my facility, because I want to have someone that I can direct them to that I know will help them. And I want to give the person options. And I cannot tell you how often that person comes in and they're like, no, I just want to buy a new driver. And then into this halfway, you know, three quarters way into the session, they're seeing that it's a mistake. And they're like, okay, you're right. Let me go take some lessons. And on the other hand, people are like, yeah, I'm going to take lessons. And I'm like, well, what you have isn't going to work. And that's that give and take with an instructor. And I've been fortunate to work with there's a lot of great instructors on Long Island that we work with. And they send us clients, we send them clients when it's right or when it's wrong. And the goal is to help that person play better golf. And if you just look at it that way, I can't tell you how often I get a beginner golfer, like I'm slicing the golf ball. I'm like, okay, well, listen, I could give you a draw bias driver with the weight all the way in the heel and makes it a lot easier. And today you'll hit the driver better. But if I do that, the rest of your golf career, you're going to have to play that kind of driver because you're not going to be able to get out of it. Let me give you something that has got a little bit of adjustable weight and not nearly as much draw bias to it. You won't hit it as straight today, but it's going to serve you better in the long run as you work on your game.
Yeah. There's almost this balance between giving them something that helps them with their current matchups or mistakes that they're doing, while at the same time allowing better things to develop in the future.
Correct. And it's such a player-by-player discussion because everyone has different needs and different wants. Everyone wants to play 100 rounds a year, but maybe they can only play 10.
The second example I got for you, this was actually something I posted on Twitter. And with hindsight, with having you coming on, Woody, I probably shouldn't have said it like this. But so this guy was shanking, and the person commented on my post. They said, oh, I've got a friend who's shanking it. He's shanking everything. And his answer is to go off and get a new set. And I commented back saying, yeah, well, he might be able to get fit for a shank, but eventually it's going to return. It's going to retain. If he's got a technique that is shanking it, at some point he's going to get the shank back. If he can't fix a shank with his current set, a new set would only be a temporary fix, in my opinion. And as it were, he commented back a week later. He said, my friend just got his new set back, shanked the first 5 balls with it. I had to walk off as my head exploded. So,
oh man.
I mean, my opinion as an instructor is, yes, get a set that reduces your likelihood of shanking it if you suffer it. However, you shouldn't just stick your head in the sand and say, I want the set to do the job for me as well. Because say you were able to, Woody, build a club for me that would encourage a shank for me. I don't know what you would do. It'd be interesting to ask you that, actually. What would you do if you wanted to make me more likely to shank a club? What would you do to the club? Or is that even possible?
I'd make it really upright and really long.
Right. Okay. So it just sits the heel up or adds the toe up off the ground. So basically I've got no option, right? But to heel it.
But you're still not going to shank it. Somebody else will, but you're not going to.
Yeah. I could probably figure out a way, even with that club that you hand me, I could figure out a way of making it more toey. Now, it's not to say that club is not the worst thing for me. So yeah, I see that, but you're having to go to an extreme end of the scale, right, with a club fit before it's a shankable club or a shank inducing club. For me, that guy, at some point, those clubs worked for him, his previous set. So they can't be that poorly fit for him. I don't know, maybe I'm just viewing it too much.
So here's my answer, Adam. 99% of the time, he better come see you.
Yeah.
Maybe it's 99.8% of the time, but there's a small percentage where the golf club could be causing him to do that. It could be too heavy and he's overworking it. There could be things that he's doing. It's very unlikely, because if you can't find any part of the face of the golf club and you're hitting true shanks, you probably really need to go see someone to help you with your game. But there are rare cases where I could help somebody without using Band-Aids. I talk about that all the time in fittings, right? Do you want me to use a Band-Aid? Do you want to put a Band-Aid on this? Or do you want me to give you something that will work pretty good now, not as great as a Band-Aid club, but give you a much longer lasting golf club? I don't try not to use Band-Aids. But you know what? If you're playing for 30 years, you've been taking lessons for 30 years and doing the same things, I break out the Band-Aids because I'll help you and make you enjoy the game more.
I mean, my opinion on it is ultimately, even if you had a perfectly fit club, you could still shank it with a perfectly fit club. And so that player who couldn't figure out how not to shank it with his existing clubs, at some point in the future, that shank will come back. And he doesn't have the skills or the knowledge to be able to fix the shank. And for me as an instructor, that is the thing that I would... It's almost like building an immunity in players, right?
Yep. Well, that's your sweet spot. That's where you can help that guy, again, 99.9% of the time, and I cannot.
Yeah, I mean, with everything I've learned, I think I view, you know, club fitting as an optimization similar to maybe having better strategy. So like the biggest breakthroughs in your golf game are going to come from your physical skills and technique. That's how you go from like a 20 to a 5 handicap. But you start picking better targets, you have clubs that accommodate your tendencies as a ball striker. That's how you start getting those 2, 3, 4 stroke adjustments. So the breakthroughs come obviously in the big physical golf swing stuff and impact skills. And then everything else is meant to optimize it. But there's no question, like there's shots I didn't have because I didn't have the right equipment. So like when we finally found that TaylorMade 5-wood that I have, you know, I didn't have a 235 or ish 240 yard shot I could hit. I just, you know, I was trying 3-woods for years. And this year that was the last shot I hit at the club championship to win it. I clipped the tree and I had 240 in and I stuck it to 8 feet. I didn't have that shot before. I could not have hit that shot unless Woody had built that 5-wood for me. So my skill made it happen. But if it was a 3-wood in the bag, I wouldn't have gotten the ball up in the air. I wouldn't have controlled the distance. I couldn't have landed it softly on the green. So that's how I view it and explain it to most people. It's an optimization. It's not a breakthrough. And Woody's never saying that either.
Yep. That's a great description. I love that, John. Love it.
That's why I trust you, Woody. You're honest about it.
Here's another question for you. And we won't have to name any of the manufacturers, but someone asks, are upgraded putter shafts worth it? And I know there's one company in particular. I have a buddy who's like a real gearhead. And he was bragging about this new putter shaft he got that was like, I think it was like $400. And I'm like, dude, you could spend $10,000 on that shaft. I don't care what it's going to do. So what's your take on upgraded putter shafts? I don't even know what it is half the time.
Number one, it's really hard to fit for them because you've got all these options and I don't have that $400 putter shaft in that head. So it's somewhat a leap of faith. I would tell you that I have seen data that says, oh, it's a big difference. And I've seen data that says it doesn't make a difference at all.
What difference would it make? Like, is it controlling the face better, tempo?
You'd control your distance a lot better because when you miss a little bit, the club wouldn't move it, twist at all. It changes the feel dramatically of the putter. And that can be a great thing. I guess that we don't sell a ton of them because it's very hard for us to prove that this is so much better. And you're going to spend an extra $200-$400 on something that we can't prove is so much better. We have a hard time with that. That said, most of the guys in the shop have something like that in their putter. So Mama Perfect Simple, I tried one. I couldn't get it to work. Could not get it to work. But other guys in the shop, they're all using them. But it's hard to sell because it's hard to justify to someone, hey, we're going to take this $500 putter and we're going to make it a $900 putter. And it's going to be so much better, but it isn't.
Oh, man, you're crushing so many dreams right now.
Well, by the way, it doesn't mean it doesn't feel good. It doesn't mean it doesn't look cool. There's something to be said to that, right? We sell these things. I'm not saying we don't sell them. And if I can prove that it's better, I'm happy to tell someone to spend the money. It's just that's quite hard to prove to someone that it's better.
So compared to a... you've talked about aftermarket shafts on different episodes, so people can go back to those. Like, for example, like, I don't even know how much the shaft I have and my driver is worth. I'm pretty sure it's worth a lot of money. But there's a better case to be made for an upgraded aftermarket shaft for your driver or fairway wood than a putter. Is that
absolutely
fair? Like, you could prove it because, yeah, there's a lot more going on, like the load being put on it and everything.
So let's say that we've got a 10-foot putt, right? And I get it to go 2 centimeters more straight on an average of putts. You're not going to see a difference in a lot of times, but that 2 centimeters could be 15 yards left or right on a drive. Because going so, you know, you're not talking about 8 feet now, you're going 275 yards. So it can make a much bigger difference. And it's much easier to, for me, it's easy, much easier for me to prove. Here's the stock version. Here's the upgraded version. What do you want to do? If it feels better, great. Feels very hard to quantify for me as a club fitter, a quasi scientist. If it feels better, that's great. And that may help you play better, but that's hard for me to prove that's going to make you play better. I'm more results oriented.
With putters, how are you proving? Are you using something like Sam Putt Lab and looking at face variability, or are you looking more at the outcome?
Yeah, we use Sam Putt Lab. We've experimented with a lot of different kind of technology. Still think Sam is the best. We've bought and sold a Quintec. We've used the Quad Launch Monitor, which we really do like, but there's some things we just haven't done with it. Right, as you guys know from an instruction standpoint, if I can make a higher percentage of my short putts and I can control my distance, I can putt better golf. I can play better golf because you can putt better golf. It's because it must be getting late.
Too many beers in.
This will be our final question.
You can show someone, look, you hit 5 putts with this putter and 5 putts with that putter. Look how much more consistent one was. We went over here, we hit 30-foot putts, and you control the distance way better on this one. Boom. It works better. But they're the same. Okay, you decide. They're the same. One might feel better, but the results are the same. And you can ask all the questions you want. Just because I'm getting tired doesn't mean I'm not enjoying talking to you guys.
You did mention at the start, and this might be a very quick one, what is a meaningful improvement in club fitting? When do you say stick with old clubs versus get new clubs? You said, was it 7 yards and 5 yards of dispersion?
Yeah, I think that's a good numbers. 5 yards of dispersion, 7 yards more distance for a driver.
But with irons, it'd be more like what we were discussing before. If like you can show someone like, look at this, you know, your north-south dispersion is much tighter, or even, you know, east-west as well, because that's a different game to measure against than driver distance.
Correct. So irons, you got obviously trajectory, right? If it's ballooning, you can't control the distance, even though you might be able to control it on a launch monitor. You're not going to control it outside, right? Can it land on the green? Will it stop? Is it going way too low? Or you have other factors with irons in addition to, and then the distance being the least important of the factors with irons, where it's the most important thing. I mean, I don't like to say that, but let's say the most important thing with driver. Even though if it's not going straight, it's not helping you, but the dispersion is so critical with irons.
Yeah, I think if from a customer's perspective, like if you're seeing something that's, you know, I've been in the room with you where we've like tested. I mean, I've been playing the same irons for, what has it been, like 7 years now, Woody?
Yep.
And I think I came in a couple of years ago. We were trying some like new Titleist ones, and like we just didn't find it. Some Mizuno ones, and like we just couldn't find anything that was going to outperform my current set materially. And it's just, I know people get excited by part of it's like a clean psychological slate, I think. You know, like Adam mentioned before, like the guy who was shanking, like, well, let's just get a new set of irons. Like, let's just clean the slate here and like everything will be okay. And I think that's one of like the lure of buying a new club is like, I'm getting a fresh start here. But the truth of the matter is that your impact tendencies are going to follow you around no matter what you do. You're shanking them, you're going to continue shanking them. You're chunking them, like you got to figure that out. You know, no club's going to solve that for you. So even when I'm working with Woody, if I don't see something material, what's the point, right? There's no point in doing it.
Yeah. Well, we're not telling you to change it, right? When you came in for those irons and I'm like, nope.
Yeah, just they felt, some of them felt like crap. They were too heavy feeling. I just couldn't hit them. I was like, this, after like 10 swings, I'm like, no good, no chance. I can't play with these. So you have to have this. And I remember the original set I got, I'll leave the brand name out because people go nuts about it. But I remember when I first hit those irons, I was like, wow, this is giving me something I currently do not have.
Yeah, and it made a big difference, right?
And yeah, I could just see it. It made a big difference, big difference. Or even with that fairway wood. We're looking at launch angle and spin and ball speed. We're like, holy cow, John's finally getting the ball airborne. This is a miracle. He's not hitting knuckleballs into the ground. Like, you could see it. Like, okay, this is going to do something for me. So yeah, as much access as I have to Woody and like the companies, like, to be honest with everyone, like, I can get whatever I want for free, but I don't do it. I'm not saying that to brag. I'm just saying, like, I do not change equipment often. Like, I still have the same driver from a few years ago, same irons. Like, the wedges are the only ones I change out. Like, if I have something that works, why would I change that? I don't want to change it. And I need a really good reason to switch. And I've seen them before. And if it's there, then like, yes, I'll do it. But your business depends on people buying clubs from you. I know that. But at the same time, like, I know you get paid for the fitting as well. But like, there's just...
You know what, John? If we do the right thing, we'll sell plenty of golf clubs.
Yeah, which you have. Like, that's why people keep coming back to you, because you turn people away.
We just made a change in your wedges, right? We gave you another wedge to fool around with because you've changed your technique. And maybe, in your case, perfect example. Now, you've got both of the same loft with two different soles. So you can go out and experiment and see, can I really do this with that different sole?
I was just looking to get the ball airborne with the wedges. Yeah. See what happens. Although I did, for real, and I'll say this, I don't think Andrew Rice will be listening, but he was checking in on me. He gave me a lesson about 3 or 4 months ago. I finally went out to real turf, and I was clipping the ball better than I think I ever have. So a lot of the stuff I've been working on indoors, which was frustrating, and I finally got to some like live grass a couple of weeks ago when it warmed up, and I finally could like feel the bottom of the club and the low point. And I was using, so what he gave me, I usually have a wide sole sand wedge. We went with, Andrew recommended using a standard sole, and it did feel pretty good. So Woody gave me both the wide sole and the standard sole. So I'll mess around with them. But again, I need a reason. If I see performance and I can do something at impact that I wasn't doing before, then I will make the switch. But no sense in just spending money for the sake of it. I hate people wasting money when they don't have to. All right. Did we cover everything?
Everything.
I'm sure we missed a few things, but we covered a lot.
We missed a few, but Woody's half asleep, I can tell.
No.
I'm kidding. We like to keep it at an hour and a half. We're going to cut off here in a second.
We'll do it again in 6 months or something like that.
We have no shortage of questions always. And you know the funny thing about podcasting in general? Like, Adam and I have this discussion separately. We're like, did we talk about that before? And like, we posted it. I won't say what the episode is. But Adam like saw an episode go live and he's like, wait, did we do this recently? I'm like, yeah, we recorded this 2 months ago.
I thought John had recorded one without me.
So we didn't even remember half the stuff.
I was like, I had to listen to it.
He's like, what is this episode? I'm like, you were on this, I guarantee you. But my point is that we even forget about half the stuff we're talking about. So I can't even imagine how much stuff people have forgotten from back in our catalog. So long story short, we'll definitely have you on again to reiterate many of these concepts because it's so much information.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. Again, I truly enjoy it. And I hope that if you're still listening at this point, I'm very impressed.
Yes, people do. They make it. So I'll give plugs for Woody because he's such a humble guy. If you are interested in getting fit or you want to find out if there's something better for you, they are amongst the best in the industry. You can go to petesgolf.com. As I said, they're located in Mineola, New York, which is on Long Island, just east of New York City. They're now at Lab 18 in Roslyn, which is another incredible facility. You guys just redid Pete's Golf. There's all new simulator screens and hitting bays there. It looks awesome. So check out, they've got a full staff, all the guys there. They're awesome. But Woody, appreciate your time as always. And I hope we get to play golf this year.
We got to do it for sure. And I can't thank you guys enough for having me on. I love doing these.
It's enjoyable. Yeah, we enjoy it.
Of course. And you're definitely one of our more popular guests. We always get great feedback and obviously people getting to see you. So appreciate it. Adam, where can everyone find you?
AdamYoungGolf.com. Look at the strike plan, accuracy plan. If you're suffering with shanks, don't necessarily go out and get a new set. If you want something that's a little cheaper, that's going to fix them for life, the Strike Plan is good. Yeah. And if you want a free ebook, adamyounggolf.com/hacks, HACKS. That is a free ebook. And John, where can people find you?
You can check out The Four Foundations of Golf and my new book, The Foundations of Winning Golf. And thanks everyone for listening. As always, your questions, your feedback, and we will see you next time with a new episode.